And he's on it.
A.J. Foyt has won his fourth 500-mile race.
It's a drag race. Marco Andretti, Cornish, who's going to win? At the stripe, it's home.
Goodyear makes a move. Little Al wins by just a few tenths of a second.
You just don't know what Indy means.
More Front Wings Centennial Interview Series.
Hello and welcome to another of our Centennial Interview Series. Today we're speaking with Gilles DeFerrin, one-time winner of the Indianapolis 500. Gilles had four starts at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, his first in 1995, and then from 2001 to 2003, and of course his win came in 2003 before his retirement. Gilles, can you take us back to your first year at the Speedway in 1995 and tell us some of your thoughts and memories of arriving at the Speedway for the first time in that month of May?
Absolutely. I mean, I guess my best recollection of the events were, wow, this place is different. You know, I remember it being extremely challenging. You know, I had done, Phoenix before we went to Indianapolis. Can't recall exactly if I ran in Michigan or not, but finally when we got to Indy, it was easy to see that I had a unique challenge in my hands. Mm-hmm. And I found it extremely difficult to go fast at competitive times and do competitive speeds over there. You know, at the time, the cars had a lot of power, not a lot of downforce. You know, the tires weren't as sophisticated as they are now, and it was very hard to go fast, I can tell you that.
Gilles, when you came to the Speedway in 1995, you drove the car of legendary team owner Jim Hall, and you drove the Pennzoil colors that year, as I recall. Were you aware of the history of that car, and did that add any pressure to you that year?
I'm very aware of it. In fact, that was probably one of the reasons that I came to IndyCar in the first place. I mean, you know, just to put it in perspective, at the time, i.e. 94, I was, you know, negotiating with a few Formula One teams to try to be in Formula One in the 95 season. And when Jim Hall contacted me in the middle of 94, we did a test, and eventually he offered me a contract. You know, I was very aware of who he was and who the sponsor was and the history of the sponsor, and to my mind, I thought, okay, you know, here I have an opportunity to join one of the premier series in the world, driving for one of the most legendary owners that has ever been, you know, with a first-class sponsor and a very traditional sponsor in motorsports. So, yes, I was very aware of who Jim was and who Pennzoil was.
So when you think back to racing there in 1995, as we've been talking about, and then returning there in 2001, did you find that anything at the Speedway had changed over that period of time?
Yes and no. You know, I mean, the I think the garages were, not the garages, you know, the whole pagoda and everything was a little bit different. I don't recall exactly if that was there in 95. But the whole thing was a little bit more, the track itself was, shall we say, more upgraded. However, you know, once you hit the track, you know, the feel of shall we say, an extreme challenge was still the same. I mean, there were different cars, different engines. I think the track had been resurfaced, but the difficulty level was still there.
And what about the atmosphere at the Speedway? Did you find a drastic difference between those 2 years?
Yes and no. You know, I guess, frankly, I'm a little insensitive to that. You know, I guess, you know, when I'm driving, when I was driving, I should say. I tried to block a lot of these things out. You know, I was there to do a job. I was there to win the race, and I did my best, whether there was, you know, two people in the grandstand or 100.
That's fair. Let's fast forward just a little bit more and talk about your win in 2003. Can you recall that month of May for us and your memories of that?
Sure. I mean, the way I looked at it is that, you know, the win kind of slipped through my fingers for 2 years running, you know, in 01 and 02, particularly in 01. You know, I think 01 was, it was probably my, you know, the strongest chance I had to win the race. I ran strong all month. I was leading the race in the last stages, and I lost the position to Elio on the pit stop, and I couldn't get by him again, you know. You know, and that's the way racing goes. And 02, you know, I was leading again towards the end of the race, and had a bad pit stop. We lost the left rear wheel, and lost my chance to win there. So, you know, it's something I don't want to say you start feeling increasingly anxious, but, you know, it's almost like, ah.
Yeah.
Like, ah. And, you know, 03, so that's the background of going into 03, right?
Mm-hmm.
03, we had the whole thing about the Dallara and the G-Force going into the month. You know, Roger, in typical fashion, you know, of 100% commitment, you know, we had, you know, 8 cars for both Elio and I. I had 2 Dalladas and 2 G-Forces, and he had 2 Dalladas and 2 G-Forces, you know, all race ready, all ready to go, beautifully prepared, as only Penske Racing can do. And early in the month, on the first few days of practice, you know, I had to do 2 things. One, get myself back up to speed, because I just suffered a huge accident in Phoenix, and I was just coming back from breaking my back and my neck. So essentially, Indy was going to be my first race back. And then second, choose which car was going to be more effective. You know, the first challenge was actually quite a big one. You know, the first day, the opening day, I suppose, I was really nowhere. You know, I was not feeling good at all in the car. My timing was all wrong. I was feeling very untalented. And I remember going back home on that evening and thinking, my career is over. You know, I can't drive. Anyway, went back there the second day, you know, in the morning, I still wasn't feeling very good. You know, I don't know, my timing was all wrong. I just couldn't drive very well, you know. It was something that before seemed so easy and natural, was really an effort. And so I remember at lunchtime, it was a hot day, and at lunchtime everybody parked up. You know, because if nobody wants to run in the heat and all that, and the track was alone, you know, the track was nearly empty, so I went out on the track all by myself. And I just put a bit more fuel in the car, a bit more wing, and then started running, and slowly started coming back, you know. And that time there, on my own, it was actually quite good. So then towards the end of the day, I was already running competitive time, and feeling good again. So I'm like, oh, okay, maybe I won't have to quit just now. you know, from there on, we were just focusing on trying one car versus the other. It was very little difference between the two. You know, Elio ended up sticking to the car that he was most comfortable with, which was the Dallara. You know, I was just as quick on either, but I felt maybe the G-Force had more potential because even though I wasn't used to the car or anything like that, I was immediately as quick on the G-Force as I was on the Dallana. So I decided to stick with that and work my way through it on practice and so on.
Gilles, you mentioned just briefly in passing there your teammate Elio, and you and Elio were teammates obviously for 4 years, I believe.
Correct.
Talk about that relationship that you had, because you guys are so different personality-wise, but you made such great teammates at Team Penske.
Well, he's still one of my best friends. In fact, he was at home over the weekend, you know, and I don't know. We have always enjoyed each other's company, you know. Well, I certainly enjoyed his, and you have to ask him about this, if the reverse is true. I guess we both went into it with a similar mindset, which I think was helpful to all of us. I mean, you have to remember that when we joined Penske Racing, you know, it was going through probably the worst slump it ever had. So everything was about the team, you know. We wanted to help the team, you know, step up and help ourselves. And we felt, I guess we both felt that the best way to do that was to collaborate with each other as much as we could. You know, obviously Roger had great equipment and, you know, he bought Reynards and did a deal with Honda and Firestone. You know, that, shall we say, I think the fact that Elio and I were in sync, I think helped the team a lot. And, you know, and I think through that we got to know each other better, you know, and really became good friends. You know, you start socializing with each other and so on. It was very much an enjoyable period of my life from a personal and a professional standpoint.
Well, the relationship certainly provided the fans a lot of laughs, and I think we all got to enjoy in that relationship with you guys. Going a little bit different direction here, you still hold the world's closed course speed record for your lap of almost 242 miles an hour at California Speedway in 2000 or 2001. Can you compare what is driving 240 at a track like California or Michigan? How does that compare to doing the speed you did 230 at Indianapolis? You touched that Indianapolis was so difficult. What's the comparison there?
Well, you know, Indy. You know, I guess you can say that Indy is an oval, you know, because it is. but it's not, frankly, it's more like a road course than an oval. You know, it's Fontana and Michigan, you know, and all the, you know, even the mile and a half ovals, they're high banked and so on. There's more margin for you to change lines. You can go high, you can go low, depending how the car is handling, you know. So if you're a little bit loose, you start running a little bit higher. If you're a little bit tight, you start running a little bit lower. You know, you can exit high and come out low. You can do all sorts of different things, right? Mm-hmm. And including, you know, shall we say, overcharge the corner, you know, back when we had to lift to do these ovals, you know. You know, you could go in super deep, you know, and if the front started to get unstuck or the rear started to get unstuck, you back off a little bit, you know, get yourself sorted out, run a couple lanes wider and keep going. Indy is not like that at all. I mean, you got to nail the turn in perfectly, you know, so that you hit the apex at the right place, you know, and so that you don't hit the wall on the way out, you know, and there is no margin for error, you know, zero margin for error. If you turn in a little bit early, believe me, you know, from the start, you're going to be You know? Yeah, and if you turn in a little bit late and the car doesn't turn, you're like, oh my God, this is not going to work. You know? You know, essentially, you know, if you're going to hit the fence or be in trouble right on the beginning of the corner. And, you know, the maximum you have leeway is a couple of feet either way, and that's it, you know, especially in qualifying trim, you know, where the car is super light, there's, you know, there's zero downforce in the car, you know, at that point it's even more, shall we say, crucial.
You retired at the end of the 2003 season, which was the same year that you won at Indianapolis. Have you ever had any regrets about that? Have you ever thought to yourself, wow, my career at Indy was so short, maybe I should have given it another try? Or do you feel that you've achieved everything that you could there?
No, I mean, look, I started my career when I was a teenager, you know, being very goal-oriented. Right, I wanted to win this, and I wanted to win that, and I wanted to be the best in the world, and so on and so forth. I guess, thankfully, you know, I was able to accomplish a lot of my goals, or maybe I set my goals too low. But I was able to accomplish a lot of my goals, you know. And there was always this sort of anticlimactic feeling afterwards, you know. And then I realized that what I actually enjoyed is the process, you know. I enjoyed the getting there more than the arriving, you know. And I think this shift in mindset actually made me a better driver, you know. I wasn't as anxious, I was more focused, I was, my mind was more organized, and I made better decisions in the car and outside of the car. And that was most of my professional career. It started shifting more and more this way and that way. And then finally, you know, at the end of my career, I started to realize that I wasn't enjoying the process quite as much as I used to, you know. Mm-hmm. And my focus was waning a little bit, and I could see that all the things were starting to interest me more and more. That I, you know, my mind was wandering, and you know, so I just got to a point that I thought, you know, before this loss of focus starts to affect my performance. And I start making mistakes, or I start thinking, oh, I could have done a better job as this the year before, or something like that. You know, I don't want to live through this. I want to step out, and I want to try to do different things with my life. Because I guess that's what my inner self is telling me. You know, I mean, look, I will always miss driving. You know, I love driving. I drove racing cars ever since I was a kid. I love it. You know, it's a great sensation. It's a great challenge. It's the feeling of satisfaction. It's, you will never be able to get that doing anything else in the world. But, you know, life goes on, and you got to do different things. And I could only go racing if I was 100% focused, 100% into it, you know, giving it all. I can't just do part-time racing.
Of course, since you win, you've returned to Indianapolis as a car owner. How did you find that doing that changed how you perceived the Speedway and how you approached the month of May as opposed to as a driver?
Well, I think as a car owner, you know, shall we say, drivers are unreasonable by nature. You just gotta go all in, you know, despite all the odds, despite everything, you know. And as an owner, you know, you gotta be a bit more strategic about things and plan things in a different way and so on. so otherwise you go broke, you know. But I still had that tendency to say, okay, we're here to win. come what may, you know, whatever it takes, let's go. And which turns sometimes into an expensive exercise. I mean, but I tell you, it was an amazing feeling there, you know, when we were sitting next to Jay on the timing stand. And Rafa drove his way to third place, and I'm thinking, woof, this is pretty cool. And then, you know, as racing always does, you know, like the two opposites, right? The high of running that well and thinking, oh man, we have a shot here, to thinking, you know, a few minutes later, seeing the car, you know, against the wall in the pit lane with one wheel missing. It's like, okay, never mind. Anyway, I mean, it was a great experience, and hopefully I'll be able to repeat that again.
Gilles, looking back in your 4 years at Indianapolis, and I guess now even including your time as a team owner, are you able to pick a single favorite memory? And conversely, do you have a moment that still sticks out in your mind as being the most disappointing?
I guess, you know, I mean, my favorite memories were, of course, I think leading the end of the race in the 2003 season, you know, race. We had a sequence of like four restarts in a row, and driving flat out all those laps because I knew, that if I lifted, I would have been an easy target to Elio. I mean, that cat and mouse battle there, it's really something that I always enjoyed. You know, I mean, you had to be super precise and super aggressive, and, otherwise you weren't going to convert the lead into a win. I guess that's my favorite memory. And, you know, I remember to this day, I was trying my best not to think of the checkered flag, you know. I was like, okay, just think entry, middle, exit, entry, middle, exit. You know, just drive properly and the checkered flag will come, you know.
Right.
And, because if you start daydreaming, and that's when you make the mistakes, right? So I remember going to turn three the last time and I turned four, then I'm like, okay, oh my God, this is it. I finished. You know, and that was a great moment. And I guess the probably for me the most disappointing, time was in 01 when I was leading the race, and then we had the yellow, and I came in leading, came out second. But actually, just that yellow, we were just a couple of laps, I think, from a green pit stop, which is what I really wanted. And that was just a big, you know. But, hey, that's the way it goes.
Gilles, over the past 20 years or so, a number of Brazilian drivers have found success in Indianapolis, yourself included. Can you provide any insight as to why so many Brazilians are attracted to Indianapolis over the past couple of decades?
Well, you know, I think it always started with, I guess, the great pioneer, you know, which is Emerson Fittipaldi, you know. He really single-handedly, I would almost say, inspired the country and many generations, you know, to go motor racing away from Brazilian shores. I mean, he did that in the 70s in Formula One, and he did that again in the 80s when he came over here to the U.S. You know, you have to understand that you know, this guy is a legend, and I would attribute most of this influx of different Brazilians, not only here to the U.S. and Indianapolis, but across the world to, you know, starting with him.
Jill, in your long career, you've been able to call yourself a back-to-back kart champion. You were the 2003 IndyCar champion. But I think your hallmark will always be the 2003 Indianapolis 500 champion. What does that title mean to you?
Well, it's really hard to put it in perspective, really. I mean, you can look at it from a variety of different ways. You know, I mean, it's one of the biggest challenges in motorsports, and you know, to have that, it's almost like say, okay, you climbed Everest once, you know, or you won an Olympic gold medal. You know, in our sport, there's so few events like this. In fact, that is the only event that I know, you know, holds such high stature, and it's a one day thing, and that's it. You win that one, and that's it. I mean, it's hard to explain, you know. I mean, it's clearly very important because, you know, from that day onwards, I've always been introduced as the 2003 Indy 500 winner, almost like it's my surname. you know, I guess that says something. You know, I mean, you can also look at the perspective of your company. Who also has won the Indianapolis 500, and you know, it's a long list of who is who in the motorsports. You know, some of the most legendary names that we have ever heard of, I think, are part of that list. And you think, okay, I guess I'm in rarefied company here. I don't know, and it's hard to put in perspective.
Well, Jill, we certainly thank you for the time you've given us this morning. We congratulate you on your wonderful career and, of course, your Indianapolis victory, and we certainly look forward to seeing you back at the Speedway this year.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that.
And thank you for joining us today as we profile Jill DeFerrin and his victory in 2003. Remember to join More Front Wing throughout the rest of the month as we bring you more Indianapolis 500 champions and look forward to profiling their careers. And remember that More Front Wing is your source online for blogs, podcasts, photos, and more covering the IZOD IndyCar Series and beyond.